Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 384 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyron, your host, as usual. Today, we're going to reach back into the archives once again. This is as a result of I was looking for something to read the other day, and I was perusing my bookshelf, and I came across a book called Reach Out, The Simple Strategy You Need to Expand Your Network and Increase Your Influence. The author of that book, Ms. Molly Beck, was my guest way back on episode 101. I so enjoyed revisiting the book that I re-listened to the previous Law Entrepreneur episode and had a great time just catching up with that memory, so to speak. So I thought we would share that with the audience today. So here once again, from back in the past, but still relevant today, every bit of what she has to say, still useful today, is Miss Molly Beck.
Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 101. Can you believe it? 101 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as usual. Today, my guest is the delightful Miss Molly Beck. Molly is a successful entrepreneur who is best known for, well, I can't say she's best known for anything. She's actually well known for many things. She is the creator of Messy Bun, a platform for podcasters, the author of a book called Reach Out, about improving and expanding your circle of influencers. She writes the blog, which is one of my favorites, Smart, Pretty, and Awkward. And she's a regular contributor to Forbes magazine. So you can see she's got her fingers in a lot of different things. I think you'll be delighted to listen to Miss Molly Beck. Well, I'm delighted that you could make the time to be with us today. Molly, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, let's see here. My name is Molly. And, you know, I had the urge to say that I was when I was born, which I don't think is what you are looking for. So I spend my days doing a bunch of different entrepreneurial projects. One of them is I run a company in the podcast space. One of them is that I write a lifestyle blog. One of them is that I do live events and coaching experiences with a co-founder. One of them is that I write a biweekly column for Forbes on networking. And then I also do consulting for businesses looking to expand their digital presence. Some of the current companies that I've worked for would be Venmo, Rice University, Hearst, a bunch of startups. And then the main thing that I'm so excited about that I think we're going to dive into today is that a few months ago, my first book came out with McGraw-Hill. The book is called Reach Out, and it's a strategy for anyone to expand their network. The book is super tangible. Lots of tips that you can take away from the goal is every page should have a tip. And by the end of the book, if you follow sort of the instructions as we move along, the reader will have created their own networking plan based on the community that they want to build around themselves.
You know, when I read your bio and started to get to know your background a little bit, I mean, I got exhausted from all that you do. I don't know how you manage to do you know, everything. You
well, we were just talking about how I do wake up very early in the morning, so that is a bit of a help.
Yeah, are you part of the morning routine crowd that has, you know, that does more before anybody else wakes up than your neighbor?
I think I'm more part of the crowd that I have to go to bed very early because I get very tired, so then I wake up early in the morning. I'm not sure. I will tell you, I absolutely loved that book, What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast by Laura Vanderkam. And every time I have the book on my shelf, and I always feel like I should be doing more. Don't we all feel like our morning routine should be getting better?
No kidding. I mean, I have these elaborate schematics of how to spend my morning, you know, effectively, including, you know, a reading period, a meditation period, a period to exercise. And all I found out that I really do is I spend more time drinking coffee and doing the crossword puzzle.
Exactly. So. That, I totally relate to that. The one thing that I do that has made my mornings run a lot smoother is the second I get up, I get dressed, I shower and I get dressed for the day. And I feel like if I don't do it as soon as I get up, then when I started at like, you know, 7 or 8, it feels like it ruins the flow of the morning. So by like 5:30, I am dressed and ready for the day. And then I work out of my local Starbucks many mornings. So I try to get there when they open at 6.
Wow. So you're ready for the fresh coffee at 6.
Oh yeah. I need the coffee. I do. Although, you know, what's interesting. I actually do the decaf coffee. I can't take the caffeine.
Oh really? So it's just all psychological for you.
It's all in my head. Isn't everything.
So you have so many things going on there, and they're so interesting. Every last one of them, I'm hoping we can fit it all in today, but you know, one of the things I really like, I love your blog, Smart, Pretty, and Awkward. And I don't know what that says about me, that because I'm not sure I'm your target audience, but it's just, I just love it. So
thank you so much.
How long have you been writing?
Yeah. So the blog is, as you mentioned, called Smart, Pretty, and Awkward. And the gimmick there is that every post has 3 pieces of advice: how to be smarter, how to be prettier, and how to be less awkward. I started the blog in 2008 when I was doing a 6-month-long internship at Goldman Sachs, the investment bank, and I was looking for an outlet that wasn't necessarily related to finance or numbers. Yeah. So I started writing back then. And, you know, if I was to sort of delineate my life or my career, you know, I can really divide my life before and after I started the blog in terms of opportunities that were available to me, what it did for my own sort of, I don't know what the word would be, for my own self-esteem, I guess, that I had a project that was just mine, no boss, that I could do. It really set me on sort of the entrepreneurial journey. And yeah, I still write it today. We're coming up on almost 10 years later.
Well, that's remarkable. And I mean, you started it right at that key point, 2008, when really the blogosphere was kind of exploding. On kind of a, I don't know if this is a personal note or how to frame this question, but do you get any pushback from the pretty aspect of your writing?
I would say that the only pushback I've ever gotten is from sort of trolls that have said that you're not pretty enough to be giving advice on how to be prettier.
Yeah, you're going to get that from knuckleheads. Yeah.
That would be the only real criticism I've ever gotten on it. Yeah.
I think actually, frankly, it's a refreshing kind of openness and a willingness to address that component of your life. And I think it would be easy to bury that or, on the other hand, emphasize that to the exclusion of everything else, because I think the most important part is the first word in your title, the smart.
Yeah, you know, I would say, so the reason I did How to Be Prettier is because 2008, when I was starting it, really the only blogs that happened were ones that were in the fashion beauty space. So I thought that's where I needed to be. And if you know, as you know, since you read the blog, I actually don't have any photos on the blog because I want, even if you don't look like me, I want you to be able to take the tips and apply it to your own life. And I worry that if you just see photos of me like gallivanting around, then you're not going to be able to take that advice and apply it to your own life. And then I'm pretty strict about what I have in terms of like editorial standards on the blog: no swearing, no sex, no alcohol mentions, no dieting tips. No, if I link to clothes, the clothes have to be under $125 and they have to be available in like sizes that go through like, you know, petite to plus size. I try to make the blog as inclusive as I can in terms of the advice, but I am sure that there are people that that think that it's not inclusive enough. And something else I do, because some of the less awkwards are related to relationships, is I always use gender neutral pronouns in terms of assuming who someone's partner is to make it accessible to people that are coming in from different vantage points.
Yeah, I think there's a danger of thinking that, oh, well, this thing is so easy to write. You know, I'm just kind of cataloging some interesting things that I see all around me. But I think our listeners can hear the planning and the choices that you've made along the way to make it exactly the kind of product and platform that it is. And I will just say, just for all the men out there who are listening, you know, the how to be prettier, there's a lot of tips there that, frankly, we all can use. You know, it is gender neutral in that respect.
Right. I mean, I actually do a lot of products that I think are helpful for both genders, which would be like tomorrow I have a post going up about natural deodorant. Like, you know, I go the gamut. It's not all makeup tips, although there are some makeup tips.
Right. I think it's great. So I love that platform of yours.
Thank you. I'm so happy to hear that.
So let's talk a little bit about then, you know, something that I know that's important to you right now that's coming up shortly. You also do a live event, I think you said, with a partner, and that's the Your Turn to Start. What would you call it? Would you call it a conference or?
You know, we sort of call it a live event and coaching experience because we really keep the – so Your Turn to Start is – a 6-hour workshop that helps participants sort of define their personal brand and then where they want that brand to go, whether that's starting a blog, a book, a podcast, a Facebook community, a company, how to quit their day job, and then also some of the sort of aspects of running a business, like how to do payroll, when to get legal, how to do a graphic design logo. And the reason that we sort of, my co-founder is Jen Glantz and I, the reason that we say live event and coaching experience is that we really cap the participants at a very small number. And there's two of us, Jen and I, and you get a lot of one-on-one attention. We also divide you into groups based on what you are looking to do. You know, podcast folks go here, bloggers go here. So we sort of call it that hybrid. And then most participants, not all of them, but the majority of them usually have some coaching sessions with Jen and I either before or after the event, just to make sure they're getting the most out of it. So that's what we sort of call it, live event and coaching experience. I'm really open if you have a better way to say that. That's what we're using right now.
No, I think that's a perfect description, because sometimes we get a little too cute with these things and we come up with a name or a description and you can't tell anything, you know, from it.
What it is.
Exactly. Yeah, what it is. So live event and coaching experience, I think, works great. Now it's coming up, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we have one in LA on March 18th. And then our next New York one is April 21st. And we are sourcing participants now. The LA one is getting close to being closed. And the New York one, the page just went up. So if anyone's interested in attending, we love doing the events. We meet the coolest people and would love to have you. Participants usually have a very positive experience. Both Jen and I have a lot of experience in media and PR and placements and, you know, doing the things like books and blogs and podcasts and all of that related to everything.
So we will have all of those links on our notes page. Right. But if you are just want to get ahead of the game, you're sitting at your computer, you can go to www.yourturntostart, all one word, yourturntostart.com. And get the lowdown on what's going on. Now, how long have you been doing the live event? Molly Beck, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me. Probably about 6 months ago, maybe a little less. Actually, maybe a little more, really the summertime. And now we do these groups of people. So now we have people that have gone through the program and working with them on sort of next steps. And we do a lot of coaching. That's like, we just had a meeting yesterday to talk about sort of how we see Your Turn to Start growing. And we're getting a lot of demand for coaching, especially two-on-one coaching. So a half hour with Jen, half hour with me. And so we're trying to think of what is a way to sort of leverage that going forward, even if someone's not in New York or LA, which is where our workshops typically are.
How did the two of you meet?
We actually met through reaching out, which is a good segue into my book. But Jen had reached out to me about 5 years ago because she was a fan of Smart Pretty Awkward. And then we stayed in touch. And when her first book, she has two books, when her first book came out, she reached out with me to help promote it on my site. And we got together and we've just been really great friends ever since. Jen's, you might know her because she is the world's first professional bridesmaid. People hire her to be a bridesmaid at their weddings. And when her story she did a Craigslist ad saying, "I'm a bridesmaid for hire," and it got picked up everywhere. So I think the number is like 524 or something press outlets. She's been on the Today Show, Good Morning America, every outlet you can think of, sort of sharing her story. It led to a great book with Simon & Schuster. And now she has like a Facebook community. Yeah. She does it all.
It's amazing. You know, her story. I would love to reach out to her as well.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
So then let's move on. Cause I want to make sure that we have some time for reach out, but somehow through all of this, you know, you get the blog going, you've got this live event going, and now you find time to run another company called Messy Bun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Messy Bun. So I've been working in the podcast space for a couple of years. I launched Forbes Podcast. I do a lot of consulting for businesses that are looking to get into the podcast space. And I kept coming up against this barrier where people would tell me ideas they had for podcasts they wanted to start. And their ideas were always great. It was that they were great ideas for a show. And then when I followed up a couple of weeks later, "Hey, what's going on with your podcast idea?" It always came back, "You know, there was a lot of tech involved, or I didn't have the right microphone, or I didn't have the money to hire someone to help me with it. So yeah, I'm not doing the podcast idea anymore." And I just thought it was such a shame because, you know, if someone wants to write for Forbes and you're not ready to write for Forbes yet, Forbes will say, "Okay, great. Why don't you go start a blog on WordPress or Squarespace or any of a number of sites, Blogspot. And then once you have some traction, come back to us." But if someone wanted to do a podcast for Forbes, there's not one easy site to send them to say, "Hey, yeah, start recording and let us know how it goes." And I really felt like there was a gap in the market from a one-stop shop, you know, all-inclusive platform that someone could create a podcast on. So if you go to messybun.com, the site's been live for about 6 weeks now. We have about 400 users that have created 85 podcasts. And if you go to messybun.com from that one interface, all you need is an internet connection. You don't need a microphone. You don't have to download anything. You can record, edit, add in music. We have a free music library. You can also upload your own. We have the ability to fade in and out, to add tracks. You can add up to 3 layers of sound. And then you can publish it from that interface. When you publish it, it automatically appears on Messy Bun, which is delineated by categories. And then you also get an RSS feed that you can use to run your podcast on places like iTunes or Stitcher. So it's really like you could think of it as a Medium or a WordPress for podcasts.
Yeah, that's exactly how I was going to describe it. It's a platform to do everything end to end for your podcast with a minimal amount of investment that can then expand and take on the characteristics of, you know, any other podcast offering through, as you said, the RSS feed.
I will say not even a minimum amount of investment, no investment. The base level of Messy Bun is 100% free, no upsells. If you want to start a podcast today, you could have it published within, you know, I don't know, 25 minutes or something with no money down, no credit card, just a way to share your voice.
Well, I'm going to be, you know, sending a whole lot of people your way from my daughters at Comic-Con tribe. Well, who all want to do podcasts and all have, you know, these terrific ideas to share. And then I'm also associated with Women's Flat Track Roller Derby. So
I mean,
I think there's a market there for them as well. So I'm really excited to have learned more about Messy Bun what it has to offer.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexiclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's five or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
So now that brings us to your writing career, notwithstanding the blog that we've already spoken so highly of. And the book that really grabbed my attention and is the reason that I really wanted to see if I could get you on the show was your book, Reach Out, A Simple Strategy That You Need to Expand Your Network and Increase Your Influence. And if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you know that one of the big challenges that attorneys have, particularly solo attorneys or small firm practices, is being heard, being noticed, and staying, of course, relevant, but reaching out to potential referral sources and potential clients. And I think looking at your book and the reviews and some of the general information that has that you shared about how the book was constructed, I think it's a perfect opportunity for lawyers if they're looking to improve that aspect of their marketing and branding.
You know, thanks. You know, I will say that the response to Reach Out has been really strong from people that either are running their own small business and that they want to become, without the word small in front of it, or that they are looking to build a community around their work and make sure that those around them know what their expertise is, what they can help in, and they want to be able to tell people what they specialize in without being too salesy or without feeling like, hey, I'm at a networking event and here's my card and like, hope you follow up. That way of walking into a crowded room and being able to drum up business does not work for the majority of people. It doesn't work for me. I can't do it.
Yeah.
And so Reach Out is a great, you know, one of the people that blurred my book called it, like, I think she said, an introvert's guide to, you know, networking or something like that, because you know, I don't like walking into a crowded room and feeling pressure to network with everyone. And Reach Out is a great way, whether you live in a huge city, a small town, where you're looking to build your practice, whether you're looking to just expand your relationships with past clients, I'm hopeful that Reach Out would be a good fit for you to read.
Well, I certainly plan on doing so. Tell me a little bit about, you know, what was the motivation? How did you come upon this particular aspect or this particular idea to write about?
Well, like the story of Reach Out really starts probably like 6 or 7 years ago. I was at an event in New York in the Village, and I was talking to a man. And as we were talking, I just had one of those moments where sort of something clicks in your brain. And I, you know, the man was sort of name dropping people, and he was just using lots of language that I always associate with people that are successful. You know, he was talking about how he and his boss were working on a big deal together. He talked about somebody that he didn't use the word mentor, but was clearly a mentor to him. He worked, I believe, in finance, and he was name dropping people that I wasn't super familiar with, but he obviously thought were impressive. And he just was sort of the stereotypical person that's having success. And I was really jealous. I wasn't there in my life at that time. And, you know, I had a day job, and I really cared about, you know, being successful, although I hadn't really sort of verbalized what that really meant in my life. And I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have tons of friends in my industry. I knew eventually I wanted to sort of go out on my own and do consulting, but I had no idea how to make that happen. And, you know, this guy didn't seem that much smarter than me, and he was having a lot more success. And it occurred to me that it was because not only who he knew, but who knew him, and people that were able to, you know, refer him for projects or give him advice. And I got really sort of jealous, to be honest. And so I had this sort of realization at this, I think it was someone's birthday party. And, you know, then probably someone was like, hey, let's go on the dance floor. And I sort of forgot about talking to him. And then as I got back to my desk, it was over the weekend, as I got back to my desk on Monday, I just kept thinking about if the secret to getting ahead is having people know your name, how could I leverage that? And, you know, I think we often think, oh, I already have a community around myself. You know, I have best friends. I have a family that cares about me. And I definitely had that. I've had the same best friend since I was 5. I have really supportive parents. But, you know, those people aren't necessarily in my field, or they can't necessarily refer me solid business. And so I needed to be sort of more intentional about the community I was building. So I decided that every morning I would send an email to someone that I didn't know that I wanted to know, or I would send an email to someone that I had met in passing or a mutual friend and sort of strengthen that connection. So I put Reach Out on my Outlook calendar every morning, 9:15, and I gave it no end date, just during the week, not on the weekends. And that was 7 years ago now. And so I've been doing that for many years. So this is how Reach Out starts. Then about 2 years ago now, Forbes asked me to write a column, and I write a networking Q&A column for them, but they asked me to write a column for Mentoring Moments, which is a series where people talk about a moment in their life where everything sort of levels up in their career. And I, you know, was trying to rack my brain what would be an interesting topic to write about. And I was like, hey, you know, I've never wrote about reaching out before, which is what, you know, I called it RO. I never wrote about, you know, these emails I send every morning at 9:15. So I wrote up a piece about that and sent it off to be published. And it was published a couple of months later. And the day it was published, I truly thought my LinkedIn had been hacked, because I like came out of a meeting and I had all of these requests, and I'm like, oh no, I've been hacked.
Oh dear me.
Actually, that the article had gone really viral. And as soon as I realized that the article had gone viral and people were responding to Reach Out, I was like, this could be the book idea. And so at the same time this was happening, I'd had a book agent for a couple of years from the blog. We shopped so many proposals. I think I had maybe like 31 or 32 rejections from publishers. And eventually it just became clear that the ideas I had pre-Reach Out were just not a fit. And I truly thought that sort of the book dream, quote unquote, was just not going to happen for me, at least not happen anytime soon. And so I sort of put that away on a shelf. And then the day that that reach out, the article went viral, I was like, this is finally an idea that I think it will impress publishers, that it's already resonating. I can probably write it rather quickly. And it's like a concept that's contained enough that it would do well as sort of a reference, fun little business book.
So many things there to unpack and to dive into a little bit. Let's start a little bit back about your own personal process. So you have this epiphany at a party one day, and it manifests itself in you putting an event on your calendar every morning at 9:15 to send out an email. Now, did you end up standardizing those emails, or was it a unique email to a unique individual each day?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I do the emails sort of one-on-one. They're going to people in wildly different,
right.
You know, in an average week, I might reach out to someone. Like right now, a big focus is they really want to do a TEDx talk. So I've been really focused on reaching out to people in the TED space. And, you know, last week I was focused on people that might be able to give me advice on messy bun. You know, sometimes I focus on, you know, places that may be good partners for your turn to start. I'm sort of all over the map.
Right.
So I don't standardize the emails, but I do have a format that sort of over time, I just sort of have naturally fallen into. And I have like two or three sentences that describe messy bun, that describe the book, that describe the projects I'm working on, that I can sort of copy and paste into emails.
But generally speaking, it's unique to each recipient.
Yep.
And it sounds to me like it's almost a little bit of a journaling process for yourself, because I'm sure whatever's going on in your day or in your life at that time is reflected in those emails. If you could collect them all up, I bet they're, you know, just in and of themselves, there's a story arc there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the book, if anyone gets the book, you see I put in a lot of emails that I've sent out, like the actual copy paste. Some of them have spelling mistakes. Some of them I look back and I sort of cringe,
right.
But they definitely tell the story. The emails at the very beginning were super focused on getting a new job. I was working at one place. I wanted to work someplace else. Then I focused a lot of emails on how to get a mentor. Then for a long time in New York, I was doing two or three sort of like, what would be the word? I guess like I was going to a lot of like talks, I guess. I don't know how I really would describe that. And so I would, a lot of my emails were focused on speakers that I had heard. And now I'm at a place where I just moved to LA. And so I'm really focused sort of on making friends, especially friends that have entrepreneurial interests in this area. And so a lot of my emails now are focused on, hey, like, you know, without being too creepy, would love to be friends with you. I need more friends out here. And this person recommended you be a good fit. So the emails definitely tell a story of my life. I mean, can you even imagine the emails I'll be sending a year from now? What projects will I be working on then? I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it sounds, like I said, almost like a diary or a journaling process that's reflected in your outreach.
That makes me feel better that I don't keep an actual diary, because I always feel sort of low level guilt that I don't do that. So thanks. You just made me feel better about that.
Well, you know, I'm going to I'll share with you. That's another disappointment in my own life. I've got these wonderful journals that people have given me or that I've bought for myself, because I think, you know what? I am going to, by God, I'm going to journal every day, because everybody says it's great. And I get like 6 days in and I'm bored listening to myself.
I know. It is hard. It's hard to write. You know, what's one thing that's helped me is that I write down five things that I'm grateful for every day. I'm like this little thing next to me. And I know that sounds like you're already rolling your eyes, but it's actually been a really like sort of fun practice, because after the first like 3 days, you get tired of saying like my family, my right. pet. And so you say really specific things. And then yesterday I was cleaning out, I don't have an office, but I have like a walk-in closet that I've turned into an office. I call it my clawfice. So I was cleaning out my clawfice, and I found like old gratitude journals or whatever you want to call them. And it was really funny, the things I was grateful for a couple of months ago. Cause I was like, oh yeah. Like a lot of them were like, hey, like my friend Katie's coming over, or Jocelyn's in town. I'm like, oh, that was so fun. They came over that day. So it's one way to do it.
For certain. So was there any particular methodology that you use to develop the book, or I'm always interested in the workflow and the tools that you use and how you really got all that good stuff that's in your head onto paper.
So I would say that the process, I did a lot of interviews up front. I interviewed probably well over 150 people for the book. Not all of them made it in there, but I was really looking to have people answer questions up front of why they didn't network, why they didn't have a community, and what sort of tools would be helpful for them in a book that would get them out there. And then I also was asking people that were great at sort of building a community, hey, can you send me emails? What's the most interesting person you've met? Who's the most life-changing person you've met? And then in the actual book, and almost every chapter, I have a section called Peek Into My Inbox, and I do stories of other people and who they met that was impactful. And some of them are bold-faced names. You know, we have Arianna Huffington, we have Richard Branson, and some of them are, hey, I really wanted a job. And this actually, we have a great example in the book of a lawyer that was graduating law school. She really wanted a job in a very specific field. Actually, you know what? I think she's actually in Maryland. I should meet connect you all, and how she wanted to work for a state senator, and sort of the process she went through and the actual emails that she sent to get that role. And the book is really filled with case studies from other people about sort of how they have reached out across tons and tons of different disciplines. And then I also sort of the overarching case study in the book is how I am building and built Messy Bun through using these reach out principles. So how am I talking to potential investors? How am I talking to potential partners? How am I finding people to actually use the site? And that's sort of like the thread through each chapter.
Did you just sit down with a word processor and bang it out? Or did you use something, a writing platform, specifically designed?
Yeah, I know. I just used Word, and I knew my word count, and I would say that some people are natural writers. I'm not that person. It was really important to me that the book was sort of funny and enjoyable to read and felt very lighthearted with lots of tips. But to get there, I always joke, like when I got the first round of edits back, there were so many like notes from my editor, like this joke is not funny, kill this joke, you know, no puns, you know, because I had never written something quite as long as the book right. before. And I really didn't want it to be another boring book on how to network. I wanted it to be funny. And I include a lot of stories of times that I totally messed up and, you know, sort of what happened next. And I wanted to just be sort of accessible. And I say literally in the opening chapter, this book is not written by someone that is at the top of their career telling you how to network. There are tons of other books, if you want to go that route, that will tell you how someone became sort of a titan of industry. I'm in the trenches. I am trying to get ahead. This is what method has worked for me so far. And let me show you how it happened. But I am hoping that this is not the period of my career. This is like what I'm hoping is the second word in the sentence.
Yeah, that is so on point. I think that kind of approach, that kind of positioning is so much more valuable than, you know, listening to the networking strategies of Richard Branson, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, Richard Branson, when he's sending emails, is getting a different response than me.
Absolutely.
You know, and I'm really upfront in the book about response rates. You know, I don't get 100% response rate on my emails. Some of them, there's different types of, you know, emails you can send, which I go into in the book, but some of them have like a 20% response rate. You know, that means that for every 5 emails, only one's getting a response because the person's never heard of me. They're not interested in what I'm sharing. And that's just part of the process. One of the reasons I really advocate for sending these emails every day is because A, you get better at it the more you do it, but B, you also sort of forget that all of the people you reached out to that didn't respond. And so when I was pulling emails from the book that I wanted to include, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot I like spent a really long time writing that email that I never got a response to, or oh yeah, that one didn't go anywhere. Because over time, only the ones that sort of shine stand out.
What did you learn that surprised you in the process of writing this book? Is there anything that came as a surprise or that you were pleasantly surprised to find that you learned?
You know, when I wrote the book, I wasn't sure what the reaction would be, to be honest, mm-hmm. because I think that people have a perception that networking is really boring and very unattainable. And I was worried that a criticism of the book would be that it just wasn't helpful for people. And I've been very happy so far that people are saying that the book is helpful. And it's, I was nervous publishing it. I've never actually written something that you can't edit later. I've only ever really written for the web. And, you know, if I write a blog post and then I'm like, oh, I phrased that sentence wrong, it's easy to change it. And I was really stressed about publishing something that you could never change. And actually, that's an interesting sort of story too. So the book came out on a Friday, but Amazon started sending out advanced, like people that had pre-ordered got the copy a few days early. And I got the first, I got like an email from someone that I didn't know that was a reader of the book, like the Wednesday before it came out. And I was so excited. And I read like the opening, you know, sentence. And I'm like, hi, Molly. Like I pre-ordered and I've been reading your book. And I'm like, oh my gosh, real reader. This is so exciting.
A real fan.
The email was actually about a typo in the book that was like, you know, 40 pages in, and it's super minor. I don't think that no one else has mentioned it, but it really killed my confidence, honestly, going into that launch week. And I think about this, it's like, there's one word that's missing in a sentence. And I think about that missing word all the time. And it really was sort of one of my worst fears of a book coming out, was that even after all the edit rounds and McGraw-Hill proofreading it and me looking at it a drillion times and all of that stuff, you know, sometimes mistakes do happen. And that really honestly killed my, I mean, look at, I'm still talking about the book's been out for 6 months. And so I would say that that's something that surprised me, is that I did get that feedback, and I am still here, and I'm still standing, and I'm still talking about the book.
Yeah, but the neat part about all of this is that it has quite a following and it's done well. So,
you know, I wouldn't say it's, I mean, I'm very happy with the response. I mean, I'm certainly not on the New York Times bestseller list or anything, just to get those expectations in check. But yes, I'm very happy with the book. I am hopeful that I have a couple other ideas for second books that would be good sort of next in the series that I'm hoping to find a home.
Was there anything that you learned that turned out to be less true than you had anticipated, or not as important as you thought it was? Did the process shed any light on that?
I thought most people would be interested in networking to find a new job. And actually, people were really interested in networking to do two things: to make friends and to grow some sort of side hustle. And usually the side hustle was related to something in the consulting field. That was surprising to me.
It is different from a lot of other ventures in this space, in the sense that you started from, I wouldn't say a social media platform, but technology certainly was a central part of the process, if not the central part of the process.
The central part, yeah. You need an internet connection in order to make it work.
Yeah. So, you know, is networking different in this day of social media? And how do we keep from, you know, getting to a point where we spend all of our time tending to our social media platform under the guise of networking?
Great question. So yes, I think networking, the biggest change between now and pre-internet is that everybody Googles everybody else as soon as you hear someone's name. And so that's just the way of the world. And you can rail against that and say, I don't want to be on social media, I don't want a personal website, but just know that you are missing out. And chapter 2 of the book, so right at the very beginning, is a book on how to build your digital presence. 3 really easy steps. You know, the first one is having an inbox that you can control. The second is being active on LinkedIn. And the third is being active on one more social platform of your choice. And you have to have those things, because being active on social media provides credibility and like reliability. Yeah. So you are who you say you are across multiple platforms. And there's some really easy things you can do to be active on social and have it work for you. You can have the same photo across multiple platforms. You can have a bio that actually describes what you are. You know, I love a fun bio that says, like, you know, lover of coffee and cheese as much as the next person, but that doesn't tell anybody about what they should be connecting with you for or who you want to meet. And then you also need to keep those platforms active, not super active, but ideally if you're going to have the time to be on LinkedIn or on Twitter or on Instagram, you need to be updating at least once a week. And those posts can be short, but you need to be active on them. It's a bad experience for someone to try to verify you and they go to your Twitter feed and you haven't tweeted in a year and a half.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, your LinkedIn is still showing your last job.
Exactly. Yep. Right. And, you know, the LinkedIn stuff, people got really freaked out, quote unquote, about LinkedIn and how to describe themselves and all that stuff. And I'm hopeful the book has some sort of tangible tips, like there's two really frequently asked questions on how to do LinkedIn. The first is that people often say, I feel like my academic experience, whether it's that I didn't graduate or that I didn't go to a law school that's as successful as someone else or whatnot, is just, I'm embarrassed of my academic history. I say that if you're more than 10 years out of school, you don't need to have your academic history on your LinkedIn. Right. Your work experience should speak for itself. And there are a couple things you can do. If you attended a program but didn't graduate, you can list the relevant courses without a graduation date. If you feel like I talked to several people that were very successful that didn't graduate high school. And so they didn't know what to put there. And so we talked about maybe taking a certificate course online and putting that there. There's some ways you can sort of hack it. The second concern people often say is that they didn't stay at a job long enough. And so they were, you know, hey, I was only there for a couple of months, but I really want to put it on or else it looks like I have a gap in my resume. So I really advocate, instead of saying like December 2015 to April 2016, just have the years. So just have 2015 to 2016. If you actually get an interview or someone actually digs deeper, you can explain why you left after 4 months, but you don't need to have everybody be looking at your LinkedIn saying, he only stayed there for 2 months. What was going on there? Did he get fired or what?
Well, I'm an absolute firm believer that you need to make all those profiles personal to you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And if they read too much like a resume, then that's exactly the effectiveness that they'll have, is that of a resume.
Yes,
a resume. Mine says, my very profound LinkedIn profile identifies me as a reformed knitter. I don't know.
You know, that's funny because I'm assuming you have other stuff on there, but
of course,
if I'm looking for a way to reach out to you instantly, I have something I can latch on to. I can make a joke about knitting. I can ask you, you know, what you're purling on, you know, that's just so helpful for me reaching out to you to have something to be able to sort of joke around with you with, even as part of our first conversation.
Right. Exactly. Well, listen, Molly, this has been delightful. I could spend, you know, the rest of the day chatting with you. There's so much that you have to offer. What's the best way for them to reach out to Molly Beck?
If they're interested in the book, Reach Out is available on Amazon internationally, wherever books are sold. It's a print version, an ebook version, an audio version, and it's also on Audible. And there's also a CD, all available on Amazon. You also could find me across the web on social media at Miss Molly Beck. That's M-S Molly, M-O-L-L-Y. Beck, B-E-C-K, and that's my name on every platform. And then if you're interested in creating a podcast, you can go to messybun.com. Would love to have you on that site. And then if you are in LA or New York and you want to come to our live event experience, would absolutely love to have you. That's yourturntostart.com.
Well, as I mentioned to you, pre-recording, I'm going to make every effort to see if I can slip out to LA next month. As I mentioned, both my kids live on the left coast, and it would be a perfect opportunity for me to drop in on the event. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's awesome. Please do. I would love to see you.
All right. Well, Molly, thank you ever so much for being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode. Our good friends at Ruby, I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.